Abraham tonight. Turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter number 12. Father Abraham. By the way, he's our father. What? Yeah, he's our father. Genesis chapter number 12. Now think of this. When we come to Genesis chapter number 12, did I ever turn this on? Are we on now? All right. In Genesis chapter 12, we begin a new section of the world's history. Now think of this. From Genesis 1 to Genesis 11, we covered 2,000 years of history. Actually, we can go back for an eternity, because in the beginning God created. But it starts in the beginning, when God created time, when He created the universe. We've covered 2,000 years in 11 chapters. That's my kind of history. We're not getting into much detail there. They just kind of skim over it. And now, from Genesis 12 until Matthew chapter 1, we're covering another 2,000 years of history. That's a lot of detail. And then from Matthew chapter 1 until now, we've had 2,000 years of history. So how old does that make the earth? 6,000 years. Now those are round numbers. We're not exact, and we're not exactly sure how many. And I just say around 2,000 years for each one of those sections. And God's desire when He created man is to fellowship with man. Man messed up in the Garden of Eden and brought sin into the world. In Genesis 1 through 11, and actually chapter 6, 7, and 8, we talk about the flood. Well, God judged man for their sinfulness. And then man tried to make their own way to God. They tried to create a God in their own image. And God said, I want to raise up someone special that's going to be a representative of me. A spokesman for me. I'm going to make a way for me to communicate with God's people and for God's people to communicate with me. So He chose this man in Genesis chapter number 12. And let's read the verses. In verse number 1 through 8. We'll just read them. There's a lot that we could say about this character. Genesis 1, beginning in verse number 12. Now the Lord said unto Abram. And he had his name changed later. God changed his name to Abraham later. Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great. And thou shalt be a blessing, and I shall bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came, and Abram passed through the land into the place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moreh. And the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed I will give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord, and he appeared unto him. God appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto the mountain, unto the east of Bethel, and pitched a tent, having Bethel on the west, and Hai on the east. And there he built an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. This place called Bethel is an important place. Anybody know what the name Bethel means? That's a good name for a church. I've heard of some Bethel Baptist churches. That's a good name for a church. Bethel is... That's the kids, Bob. Sorry, you don't get candy. He's raising his hand back there hoping he gets a candy bar. Anybody know what the name Bethel means? Bethel means the house of God. The place where you meet with God. We're going to talk about Abraham tonight. The patriarch of our faith. By the way, God believes in a patriarchal system. What does that mean? Well, God bless you too. A patriarchal system is what God's intention is. The picture gives us a picture of God. Let me just give you, I kind of got in some of this in Sunday school this morning that I didn't mean to, but I just couldn't help it because we were talking about Abraham a little bit in Sunday school. But there's some words, if you learn to define them by the Bible, it can keep you out of a lot of doctrinal confusion. One of those words is a generation. When we think of a generation, we think of, you know, my grandma's generation, my ancestor generation, my parents' generation, my kids' generation. And that is actually a secondary meaning of the word generation, but the word generation means the lineage of. Abraham's generation, which when you got saved, you became a part of Abraham's generation. The book of Romans explains to us, but let me give you a couple examples. When God said, "This generation shall not pass away," we mentioned this in Sunday school this morning. I've heard a lot of false teaching of prophecy when I was a young Christian because they said a generation typically is 40 years, so that means Jesus has to come back 40 years from 1949. Guess what? That time's come and gone. Jesus hasn't come back yet, unless we missed him. But a generation, when Jesus said this generation, the nation, the children of Abraham, Abraham's lineage is not going to pass away till Jesus comes back the second time. The fact that there are Jews today proves that God is real. We are a chosen generation, the book of 1 Peter says. A royal priesthood, a peculiar nation, a holy people. God has called us out of darkness and into His light. But God believes in a patriarchal system. What does that mean? By the way, our culture once was a patriarchal system. We're not anymore. Brother Don works in the jail ministry. And I know there's actually more in our community than you realize, but just by way, I hear this illustration a lot. If you go into the jails, you see a lot of people of certain nationalities, certain ethnic backgrounds. You don't see many Asian people in jail, do you, Don? What's that? They're sneaky. There's prejudice, right? The reason for that is because the Asian people are one of the few people, cultures, left in our world that have hung on to a patriarchal system. What does that mean? What dad says, what grandpa's... You know, I got thinking about this. With my children and my grandchildren, this makes me feel really old. I'm their family patriarch. I'm the oldest living male in their lineage. That's kind of scary. And I still think I'm a teenager. In our culture, we've gotten rid of that. You know, mom, dad, they don't know anything. Let's stick dad in the nursing home. He's kind of gotten senile. And we've kind of gotten over that. And that's why our culture is in such a mess, because we've gotten away from God's original plan. We came up, let me just give you some things by way of introduction before we get into Abraham. I don't have a lot. There's a lot I could share of Abraham, but I can tice it in just a few things. But evolutionary psychology has given us a lot of bad things. Now, we didn't notice how bad they were at the beginning, but it's amazing when you study history, and I love to study history. And I see things in history and see how we got to the place where we are. Years ago, in fact, in our society, in our community, if you meet somebody, there's still a few of them around, if they're over, I'd say usually the breaking point now is maybe up to about 80 years old, or maybe it's a little less than that, they probably had part of their education in a one-room schoolhouse. How many of you in here went to a one-room schoolhouse? See, Rex, he's 90 years old. Isabel, you probably did, didn't you? Two rooms, one for the teacher and one for the students. That's something that we decided when we were introduced to evolutionary psychology that we would do better to age segregate our children. That was the first step in doing away from our patriarchal system in America. Didn't seem like much. But you look at what's happened from one generation to the next. We come to my generation. Excuse me. You have to be a certain age. Do you remember the monkeys? Huh? Hey, we're the monkeys. We're not monkeying around. We're a new generation. And we got something to say. Huh? In other words, that was our model cry. Now, some of you don't know who the monkeys are. You kids, I hope you never find out who the monkeys are. But that was our... Mom and Dad, they don't know anything. They're old fuddy-duddies. We have something to say. We have the answers. And then we start educating our children with Sesame Street. Huh? Entertainment-based education instead of learning-based education. And then we develop a technology, smart aleck generation. Hey, we got all, you don't know how to use a smartphone, boy. Are you stupid or what? Huh? That's the mentality of today. And all this has brought us to the religion of humanism, the religion of self, where this is what I think. After all, I am God. Doesn't matter what mom and dad says. Doesn't matter what grandpa says. He should have been buried a long time ago. By the way, a society that murders its babies, it's just the next step on that progression is to start murdering the senior citizens. Let's do away with them. We don't need them anymore. And we've gone the opposite of stream of a patriarchal. When you read the Bible, you need to keep that in mind, that they understood what it was. Abraham was recognized as a great hero. And the patriarch, we read often of the patriarchs. They're often mentioned by name. Abraham, and what are the next two? Isaac and Jacob. In fact, the official title of God, He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There's a number of reasons, but Abraham's a picture of God the Father. Isaac's a picture of God the Son. Jacob's a picture of God the Holy Spirit. Not this Jacob, I can guarantee you that. Maybe the fallen spirit, but no, I'm just kidding, Jacob. I love you. I love you, Jacob. No, I'm just kidding. but God is a patriarchal God. Now, the Israelites referred to themselves, and Jesus referred to the nation of Israel as the children of Abraham. Romans chapter number 11, or Romans chapter number 4, Romans chapter 11 explain how we as Gentiles, when we're saved, we become children of Abraham. We're engrafted into Abraham. Let me give you this, and I gave this away in Sunday school. For those who are in the adult Sunday school class, you were probably sleeping then, so we'll give it to you again, all right? Are you awake, Rex? I was giving Rex a hard time, but I asked everybody to stand. I didn't expect him to stand. He's back. I said, Rex, sit down. Remember when Jesus told the story? It wasn't a parable, it was a story of the rich man and Lazarus. Lazarus died and he went to heaven. The rich man died and in hell he lifted up his eyes and he saw Lazarus in the bosom of Abraham. And he had a conversation not with God, but with who? Abraham. Abraham! How many sons did he, brothers did he have? I have so many brothers. Go tell, send Lazarus back and tell Abraham, could you have Lazarus give me a drop of water on my tongue to soothe? They saw when they went to heaven, they were going to be with their father, Abraham. We're talking about that father, Abraham, for a little bit tonight. He is our patriarch of our faith. He is the foundation, if you will. Of course, Jesus Christ is our Savior. He is everything in the Old Testament is a picture of something in the New Testament. And the picture we're given, a human picture of God the Father, is found in Abraham. And I'll just give you three things to think of concerning Abraham. We're going to turn to a couple of passages of Scripture where we started here in Genesis chapter number 12. Abraham, number one, he lived for God. You need to remember that. You need to live for God. I need to determine, like Abraham, I want to live for God. I want to be like my father Abraham. I want to live for God. Abram's name means high father. His name that God changed him to later, Abraham, means father of a multitude. It was referring to the promise that he gave to Abraham that first was given in Genesis chapter 12. It was repeated a number of times later in the Bible. I want you to turn quickly, if you will, in the New Testament to Hebrews chapter number 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Kids, we got our Bibles. We're going to use our Bibles tonight, all right? We're going to turn to a couple passages of Scripture. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews is the chapter, the great hall of what? Faith, the hall of faith, not the hall of fame. I don't really care about a hall of fame, but I do care about the hall of faith. Abraham is talked about twice in the hall of faith. We're going to look at the first time he's spoken of. Maybe next week we'll look at the second time he's spoken of in Hebrews chapter 11. And beginning in verse number 8, it says, by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place that he should after receive for an inheritance, he did what? Obeyed. S-O-B-E-D. Oh, it's not spelled right, is it? We got to change the song. O-B-E-Y-E-D. No, he obeyed. Obedience. Very bad. And he went out not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned. What's that mean? That means he put up a tent. He didn't stay for very long. He wasn't planning on staying around real long. And he started this journey when he's 74, 75 years old. I forget what it said back in Genesis 12. In a land of promise, in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles. What's a tabernacle? Does anybody here live in a tabernacle? Would you like to live in a tabernacle? I'd like to live in a tabernacle. I enjoy living out in the tabernacle. Most of the time I just enjoy just living under the stars. But a tabernacle is what? A tent. He dwelt in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him, and the same promise, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham lived for God. One day he put his faith and trust in Jesus Christ. Of course, he didn't know Jesus by name, but he knew the Messiah was going to come one day. And he put his faith and trust in the Messiah that was going to come. Abraham was saved just like you and I get saved today, by putting his faith and trust in the Messiah that was going to come. Abraham didn't even have a law. He didn't have the law of Moses yet. That was given many years down the road. But Abraham knew what it was to trust in God, to call upon God for salvation. And Abraham not only called upon God for salvation, Abraham decided, I'm going to live by faith. I'm going to trust in Him. My life is not wrapped up in the things that I have here on this earth. We're going to talk about some of those things in a little bit concerning Abraham, that not all of them are found in the Scripture, but you might find this interesting, what Abraham left to walk with God. But Abraham said, I'm going to live for God. God has saved me out of His grace, and I'm going to live my life for Him. He was remembered as a man of faith, the patriarch of our faith. The just shall live by faith. But let me tell you something about a man of faith. A man of faith still doubts sometimes. A man of faith is still a man. Abraham messed up sometimes in his life. First thing, he got to the land of promise where God told him to go, and God said, this is it, isn't this great? But all of a sudden, there's a famine in the land. So Abraham packed up his tent, said, we're going to pitch our tent somewhere else. And he packed up his little bags and went down to Egypt. Egypt is a type of the world. He didn't trust God to get him through the famine. I don't know about you, but sometimes I try to help God out. God, we're getting hungry here. I know you said you'd take care of us, but I just need to help you a little bit. There's land down in there. There's food down in Egypt. Let's go down there. They probably got fried chicken down there. Huh? That's my favorite kind of animal, fried chicken. Right? They probably got McDonald's down there. I don't know. No, he wouldn't have gone for that. But he doubted God sometimes. Sometimes he questioned God, did things his own way. He went to Egypt, to the world. God said, I'm going to give you a son, Abraham, a son of promise, a son of a miracle birth. And Abraham got tired of listening and tired of waiting. And he said, God, I'm going to help you out a little bit. I've got a maid over here that she can still bear. My wife can't have children. She's lived a long time. She should be grandma by now, but she doesn't have any babies yet. And we need to help God out here a little bit. And he gave birth to a son of the flesh, a son named Ishmael, the son of Hagar, which caused problems and is still causing problems to the children of Abraham today. It's amazing how we think, well, God, I messed up, but we got over it and we're okay now. We messed up and we may have got over, God would forgive us, but we're still going to bear the consequence of that sin for a long time. For the rest of our life and the rest of our children and for generations to follow. But Abraham did live for God. He was a man of faith, but he was still a man. You know, that's one of the things I like about the Bible. A lot of folks get this idea, well, so-and-so, they're such a great man, they could do no wrong. Everybody in the Bible, you can find they did some wrong. God points out their greatness with their failures. They're still a man. Abraham was still a man, but he was a man who lived for God. He was a man, secondly, who left his home. What was Abraham's hometown? Boy, I would have liked his address when I was a kid. I had a hard time spelling things, remembering how to spell things. I could remember how to spell the hometown of Abraham. What was the name of his hometown? Who said that? Ur what? That's it. You are not Oz, but Ur. The land of Ur of the Chaldees. It was a town that he grew up. What do we know about Ur of the Chaldees? The Bible doesn't mention a lot of details about Ur of the Chaldees, but if you read some do some study on the history, what it was, this was the town that Abraham left. You know, when we first came to church here, Rachel, who's now married, has three children of her own, and her firstborn is God's sense of humor. Is just like her when she was a little girl. She was just a little girl that used to run around, tear up the carpet and everything when we came down. Rachel, sit down, sit still. You're the preacher's kid. You're not supposed to act like that. She's swinging from the rafters. Rachel, get down. On and on. But I remember she grew up down. That's the farthest back she remembered when we came here to the church. And we went back to our home church a couple of years later when she was a little older. And she started looking around with big eyes, saw all these people and saw the beautiful building and the Christian school and said, "Where are we?" She don't remember this place. And said, "This is a neat church. This is a big church. There's some good people here. This is a beautiful place." And we said, "Rachel, we used to go to church here." She said, "Why did we ever leave?" You know, she said, "All this big stuff there. Why did we ever leave this place?" If you understood what Abraham left, you would be saying, "Why did we ever leave?" Because he's following God. What was it that Abraham... We just read Ur of the Chaldees. That doesn't sound like much of a place. It was one of the wealthiest and probably the wealthiest, the most modern city in the world at that time. I mean, they didn't have Wi-Fi, but they were close to it, all right? What did they have there? They had, believe it or not, they had hot and cold running water. You just turned on a faucet. I don't know if they had a faucet like we think of faucets, but they had water. They didn't have to run down to the creek to get it like everybody else did. They had water that came right to their house, and it was hot water and cold water. They had a sewer system. If you go to many countries in the world today, their sewer system is the ditch running out in front of their building. That's where it is where Nathan and Tina live. That's what it is in most countries, many places in our world today. But they actually had a sewer system. Like what you think, well, that's not much. Oh, if you ever studied what people lived like just 100, 200 years ago, you think that was a big thing. And we're talking about thousands of years ago. They were thousands of years ahead of their time in the things that were in the Ur of the Chaldees. They had not only buildings. Remember, God talked about Abraham living in tents. Well, with the city of Ur of the Chaldees, they didn't have tents there. You wouldn't see tents there. They had buildings, not only buildings, but multiple-story buildings. And by the way, this does away with all the ideas that evolution gives us today. Well, I thought everybody lived in caves back then. This is the time period when people thought that they lived in caves. Oh, not in the Ur of the Chaldees. That was one of the more modern, that was probably the most modern city you would ever find. They had ornate furniture. You know, they didn't just carve up a log and say, "There it is." They didn't get a stick and say, "There's your spoon. There's your fork." They had ornate, beautiful furniture. They had elaborate temples where they worshiped their gods, their moon gods, which the Muslims still worship today. They had metal tools. They didn't do everything with caves, with sticks and bones and rocks like the world tells us that the... No, they had great things or great inventions. They have a system of canals that brought the water from the Tigris and the Euphrates River to some of the most plush farmlands you would ever find in the world were around the Ur of the Chaldees. They were a great prosperous place. They had well-developed laws and codes of conduct, which was really, for the most part, unheard of in that day. They had developed a modern system. Now think of this. Next time you look at a clock, See that clock back there? How many kids, turn around and look at that clock up there in the wall behind Brother Jeff. Do you know how to read a clock like that? Most kids not sure what that means. What are those numbers? What are those? That's where that was first found in history, from the Ur of the Chaldees, a clock that looked like that, with 12 hours, with 60 minutes to an hour, and 60 seconds to a minute. There's records of those being found. Now we've got digital clocks, and that's all the kids know how to. What time is it? I don't know. What's Mickey Mouse say or whatever? And how many kids like math? Huh? Oh, kind of. I loved math when I was a kid. The idea of a circle having how many degrees in it? 360 degrees all the way around a circle. You know where that came from? The first discovery we can find of it was in the Ur of the Chaldees. They were the best educated, the wealthiest, the best, literally the best place you could ever find to live in the world. They were literally thousands of years before their time, the best that we can find through history. And Abraham left all of that to go and live in a tent in the desert. And by the way, they were prosperous, and those of us who understand that climate change has been happening since the flood, there was first and foremost, Ur of the Chaldees was a great port city of the Persian Gulf. If you were to look on a map now, it's 150 miles to the Persian Gulf. But it was a port city of the Persian Gulf before climate change. Climate change has been taking place since the flood. Remember when Abraham lived just after the flood? In fact, real history tells us that the Sahara Desert was a tropical place for quite a few years, at least 1,000 years after the flood, during Abraham's day. And you can find these things by reading history, but not by evolutionary history. Because they try to, in fact, I was watching a National Geographic special a while back, and they were explaining how the Sahara Desert once was a tropic, and they talked about the rivers that used to run through there, and the great cities, the great civilizations that used to be there that are now buried in the sand. They said, the world was certainly a different place. They should read the Bible sometime. They would find out what caused it to change. But anyways, that's beside. I hope I didn't bore all the kids, but that stuff is kind of fascinating to me. But I'm just saying that to say what Abraham left to follow God, he didn't move from one tent to another tent. He didn't move from one desert place to another desert place. He left a great place. He left all the modern conveniences and more modern conveniences than many people thought that were available at that time. And he gave it all up to follow Jesus Christ. I think, what have I given up to follow Jesus Christ? Well, we've got to have this and that. Think of all the... What would you be willing to give up in your house? Your screens? Your television? Abraham didn't have any of that before or afterwards. He didn't miss any of it. Would you be willing to give up the running water? Isn't that nice to turn on a faucet? Well, when it's cold outside, isn't it nice to have a little thermostat you can turn on that heats your house? Aren't you glad you don't have to go out and find some wood to build a fire to warm yourself up in the weather we had this week? By the way, it used to get that cold here years ago, too, before they had comfortable houses like we did. Like we do. They used to have to get from one place to another on horseback or walking, most likely, rather than jumping in a warm car. Mom, can you go warm up the car for me? Mom, what's for dinner? And we complain about all the things. What would we be willing to give up to follow Jesus? Abraham was willing to give up everything to follow God. He went to the wilderness, not knowing where he went. He lived in a tent. He was literally a nomad. No place to call home. Living in a tent. God said, okay, it's time to pick up the tent and move down the road a little bit. And Abraham says, okay, Lord, but I don't see a road. He said, just move that way then. And there's nothing. And Abraham just said, I'll follow God wherever God... But he left his home. He left everything that was comfortable for him. How far would we go to follow God? I was thinking of, and we're planning on going over to see our missionary Nathan and Tina and their 5 children. And most of us can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. There was a time when God saved me and I surrendered to God. I'll be a missionary. I'll go live in a grass hut somewhere and serve you the rest of my life. I'll probably die in early life, but at an early age, but I'm willing to do that. And I want to serve you. And I was a little disappointed that God didn't let me do that. But I'm really thrilled that my son can do it. When he was a little guy, I'm going to tell you stories about Nathan. Do you mind? All right. When he was a little guy, the first time he went to camp that I wasn't there with him, I dropped him off at camp and left somebody else there. And he said he didn't sleep the first night or two. He was bawling like a little baby. I said, are you kidding me? I would have never thought that of him. He's just a little guy. First time away from mom and dad. First time away from home. He's always been kind of a homebody. He doesn't really care to go anywhere. He just wants to be around home. And then he announced to us, and I knew God was working in his heart to be a missionary when he was about this tall. And he talked about it back then. In fact, he talked about Cape Verde when he was not even a teenager yet, going there. But I remember the summer, and I knew exactly what was going through his mind. He said, I want to go work at camp for a whole summer. I said, you know what that means, Nathan? We're not going to see you for 2 or 3 months. He said, I know. And I knew exactly what was going through his mind. He was seeing if he could handle it. That was a test for a little kid. Can I stay away from mom and dad for a month or 2 months and survive? And he said, I need to go to college a long ways away. I'm away from everybody. And I talked to him about it later. He said, yeah, I guess you could say that. I was just seeing if I could do it. He's preparing for something. And now he's in a place where, well, they've got running water. They run and get it themselves. They got to have their water delivered to their house. We're just talking to him today about things that just, we can't even imagine what life was like. But they're willing to do that to serve Jesus Christ. They're willing to get. Garrett knows what it's like to be. I haven't been there yet. It's an unusual. And most places in the world are different than what we're used to. But Abraham said, "I'll be willing to leave home. I'll be willing to leave all the conveniences, all the things that I've grown up with, everything that's made life so comfortable and so easy, and give them all up and go live in a desert in a tent, not knowing where I'm going to go." Where are we going to get our next meal? I don't know. We'll trust God. Where are we going to go tomorrow? I don't know. Are we there yet? No, we're probably not there yet. And he wasn't satisfied until he got to heaven. He left his home looking for a city. And remember this, kids. Every person that ever does anything for God, they've got to do something. What is that? Somebody said it. Stand alone. You've got to stand up. No one to trust. No one can't lean back on mom and dad. I can't go back and go. I've got to stand all. This is where God brought me. I'm just going to have to survive. I'm going to have to do it. Abraham left his home to stand alone, not knowing where he was going to go. You're going to come to a place in your life where God's going to call you to do something, and let me tell you, most people are going to say, uh-uh, not me. I can't do that. I can't go without electricity. I can't go without indoor plumbing. I can't go without hot water and cold water. I can't go with a toilet that actually flushes instead of a hole in the ground. I can't live that way. Abraham said, I'll go, Lord. I'll go. I'll leave everything behind. Abraham, first of all, he lived for God. Second, he left his home. And thirdly, this is good, he loved his family. He loved his family. What was Abraham's wife's name? Sarai or Sarah. Her name was Sage of Sarah from Sarai. Sarah, his wife. He loved his wife. To protect his wife and now think of this, they were older than me. They were almost older than dirt. When God called them, when God left. But she must have been some kind of a beautiful lady. Huh? Because when he went to Egypt, remember I said he didn't trust God and he went to Egypt to try to find food? And he told Sarah, when you get there, you're such a beautiful woman. Pharaoh's going to want to take you in. to be one of his wives. So I want you to tell everybody that you're my sister. Abram, again, he lied, didn't he? That's not anything a Christian should do. But he was still a man. And he lied about his wife. He did it actually twice. He did it also with King Abimelech. That's a fun name, isn't it? Abimelech. Aren't you glad your name's not Abimelech? There's a good name to name the next baby that's born in church. Brother Chad would probably take me up on that. But King Abimelech of the king of Gur, he did the same thing. Sarah, you're a beautiful woman. And I love you. I don't want to lose you. And I don't want to lose my life. He loved his. When his wife died later in life, he gave her the best burial ground. He was willing to pay any price to make sure she had a beautiful place to lay her body, to bury her. And he wept and mourned because he loved his wife so dearly. He loved his nephew. Remember what Abram's nephew's name was? I forget it a lot. What is his name? Lot. Lot. He loved Lot. Remember when Lot and Abram weren't getting along? The herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abram, by the way, they should have got along. There's no reason brothers and sisters can't get along. There's no reason people can't get along with each other that love the Lord, that are walking with God. And Lot gave up the same things Abraham did. Lot was in the same situation Abraham did. But Lot was given a choice. He said, you know, we can't, we're brethren. Let's not fuss. And let's just part our ways. Let's go. And Abraham gave Lot the first choice. And remember, Lot chose Sodom and Gomorrah because they looked like such beautiful places. He should have never gone there. But he went there. And Abram could have said, well, he messed up. We'll forget about him. I know he's my nephew, but he messed up and we'll just leave him. But then Sodom and Gomorrah were attacked. They were destroyed by some foreign kings. Lot was taken captive with his family. You know what Abram did? He risked his life. He risked everything he had to go rescue his nephew Lot, even though Lot had turned and gone the wrong direction. Even though Lot had walked away, Abram loved Lot. We can learn a lot about love from Abram and his relationship with Lot. Abram loved his family. And then remember when the angels, the three angels, with two angels and Jesus Christ came to tell Abram what we're going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah. We're going to destroy that wicked city because of their sin. It's come up before me and I'm just going to wipe them out. And Abraham got thinking, Lot lives there. And Lot's family lives there. And Abraham started to bargain with God. And Abraham said to God, if there's 50 people there, would you still destroy 50 righteous people? Would you still destroy the city? He said, no, I wouldn't do it for 50. What about 45? What about 40? Got all the way down to 10. He bargained with God because he had the well-being of Lot, his nephew, that rebelled against God, that rebelled against him, that turned and walked away from God. Still, Abram loved Lot. And maybe the greatest love of Abram's life, I don't know if I could say that, the greatest, at the top of the chart, maybe all three of them would be at the very top. Turn, if you will, to Genesis 22. Let's look there very quickly and we'll be done. Genesis chapter number 22. We're going to introduce you to the next person. Abram, just to see that Abram loved his family. Abram left his home. Abram lived for God. He loved his family and he left his home. I want you to see how much he loved his family. The Bible tells us in John 3:16. You know what John 3:16 says? See if you can quote the verse with me. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. You know where we can see a picture of that, a reflection of that verse in the Old Testament? Genesis chapter number 22. God said, Abraham, you're going to have a son. You and Sarah are going to have a son. God, and Abraham said, that's not possible, God. We're long past that age. Sarah's not been able to have children our whole life. Now we're old. I mean, we're ready. We got one foot in the grave. We can't have children. That's impossible. And God said, Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. No, that can't be. Well, and Abraham tried to help God out. They came up with Ishmael. And then even in God, Ishmael's a young man now. And God said to Abraham again, came to him again, said, Abraham, you're going to have a son. He said, oh, if Ishmael would just live for you, he could be my son. God, there's still some hope for Ishmael. Let's not give up on him. There's still hope that he might live for you. And God said, no, Abraham, you're going to have a son. He's going to be your son. And Sarah's son. He's going to be the son who you love. And that son's name was what? Isaac. And one day God told Abraham this in Genesis chapter number 22. And it came to pass after those things that God did tempt or test Abram and said unto him, Abram! And he said, Behold, here am I. Notice how Abram talked to God. What do you want, God? No, here am I, God. Yes, sir. And he said, Take now thy son. Notice what he says. Thy only son, whom thou lovest. If I was Abraham, God, quit rubbing it in. He is my only son. He's the son of promise. He's the one that I love more than my life itself. Take that son whom thou lovest and get thee unto the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon the mountains, which I shall tell thee of. And Abram rose up early in the morning. Abram had a great love. And I'm sure his heart was broken. I'm sure he was crying as he talked to the Lord. But he brushed away those tears and got up early in the morning and obeyed God. Early in the morning he saddled his ass, or his donkey we'd call it today, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place which God had told him. And when on the third day, Abram lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. Abram loved his son, but he loved God more than he loved his son. We go back to the first thing. He lived for God. He loved God. He loved his son more than life itself, but he would rather serve God without his son than to have his son and break his relationship with God. And Abram said unto his young men, Abide ye here, the ass and I and the lad will go yonder and worship. And notice this, and come again to you. What? God said, Abraham, I want you to take your son, put him on the altar, and take a knife to his throat and kill him and burn him on the altar. But Abraham says here, we're going to come back. The book of Hebrews says that Abraham believed God was able to raise him up from the dead. That Abraham loved his son, and yet he loved God more than he loved his family. You know, a sad thing of our day today. Many people say, well, I want to know God. I want to walk with God. I want to serve God. I want to live for God. But I don't want to leave my home. I don't want to leave all that's comfortable for me. But Abraham would say, I'll leave what's comfortable and go to a place where I don't know. I don't have it all figured out. I don't know what I'm doing. But I'm going to go and follow God. Abraham loved his family. He loved Sarah. He loved Lot. He loved Isaac. But he loved his God more. He said, God, I'm willing to forsake the ones I love so that I can do what you want me to do. Now, chances are God's not going to ask you to forsake those that you love. But if it came down to it, what would we be willing to do for God? Abram was our father. He's the one that we look to him more than anyone else. Sure, he had his faults. By the way, we could emphasize, and that's a sad thing about the way a lot of people read history and study history today, write history. They magnify the faults of people instead of the great things they did. God pointed out Abram's faults, but he remembers him as a great man of faith. God still lifts him up. He's still our father. We say, well, Abraham, you know, Grandpa's an old man. He's getting senile. I'm glad that I was able to take my children and sit at the feet of my dad, their grandfather, and learn some things from him. By the way, before Dad was a Christian, they could still learn a lot from him. And they still saw his faults, but we ought to see them as great men. That's a patriarchal system that we talked about. But Abraham was our father, Abraham. The God of Abraham is my God. And I'm so grateful for Abraham, who he was, and the great character that he shows us, and the life that we ought to live, pattern our life after our father, Abraham. I'm going to ask